We're talking about E3. We're talking about the catch up of E3, and we're going to try and get my accent to not go London because I'm talking to Poke. So we're going to try and keep it a bit more neutral.
I'm going to do more London. I'm going to overcompensate.
Going to do more London.
I'm going to go deep into the South London.
Fine. Let's see how this ends up. This could be magical.
It's going to go one way or the other.
It could be a disaster. Right. So let's start. Games. Should we start with games?
We should start with games.
Or do you want to start with favorite briefings, or do you want to start with other things?
I'm open. I like all of the things. What was your favorite briefing?
Like all the things. My favorite briefing was probably the Microsoft one.
Yeah,
you know, the Xbox one. I think that was probably my favorite. I was a big fan of how many games are on Game Pass straight from the go. I was a huge fan of how many games were on PC and Xbox. Big fan of that. But the highlight of it had to be the Ultimate Game Pass.
That was huge.
Where they let you upgrade it for $1. That was so amazing. That was so amazing. To get the PC one and the Xbox one, for me, because I'm a dual gamer, was amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing deal. In fact, I thought they were going to chuck in a lot more money to get both of them. So,
well, I expected so, because Ubisoft released theirs, didn't they? They released their thing, and their price point is $15.
Yeah, just for Ubisoft.
Just for Ubisoft and just for PC, yeah. Yeah,
not including the gold deal. And not including the Xbox
Not
Game
including
Pass.
Nothing, yeah. Bruh. Not
and
including
someone
nothing.
Like you who's going to be using it on everything.
Mm-hmm. On everything. So what was your favorite briefing?
On a grand scale, Xbox was the most impressive. There's no question. But for me, the one that I like the most, because it surprised me because I'm not a particular fan of them, is the Bethesda one. The Bethesda briefing. Yeah, because
really?
I went into the Bethesda one thinking there's nothing really there that I'm going to want. It's not a game studio that really caters to me individually. I'm not really a big Fallout fan. I'm not really a big Elder Scrolls fan. So
that does in my head, a lot that of what they
everything
do.
That they did. So when I'm watching the briefing and they get me excited they got me excited about Fallout 76. The BR that they added onto it, I didn't think that was physically possible to get me excited about Fallout 76. And yet somehow they managed to pull me in. That looks like a very good BR. If it's done with the flair of Fallout, if it's done with maybe some of the ghouls, some of the additional bad guys from Fallout, then that's something that really no other BR is doing. You've got the buildings, you've got that. That could be genuinely very good. I've not played it yet, but it's definitely something that I want to jump into. And then I forgot about Doom. I forgot the Bethesda make Doom, and that looked exciting. Sometimes.
How did you forget that? Come on now. I stayed up till 1:30 in the morning just to get a glimpse of the Doom Marine, man, and that heavy metal music and the shotgun, and I was there. I was 100% there.
The
collector's edition is only £202.
I might get two. I get two.
Just chat that money around, man. Nobody needs to eat for the next month.
November, so.
Nobody needs to eat.
Yeah.
yes, you will. It's a win-win. You'll be so slim that the helmet will look like you are the hat stand.
Bobblehead.
That's how it's going to work.
Versions of the Doom guy.
yeah. Big Doom Marine helmet, little tiny body.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Doom, I saw something really funny the other day. Somebody conjured a post saying, you know, Doom's going to come and he's going to have the chainsaw and that heavy metal just pumping out of him. And somebody commented and went, I love that you've conjured the idea that the heavy metal music comes
from
the Doom
him,
Marine.
Like he's got speakers on his back.
Actually in his armor. Yeah, he's just a heavy metal, Mad Max style, badass and power chords, you know. I don't know his life, but I want to know his life. I want to know everything about him. I want to sit inside his helmet. Mate, Doom was the first PC game I remember playing. Doom has been with me every day of my life. I played it when I went to my cousin's house. They had a PC and they had it in a cupboard at the top of the stairs. There weren't even seats. You couldn't sit down in this cupboard.
90s PC.
You had to stand up and
kind of
lean in.
I know a lot of people who had that set up.
And that's where the computer was. It was. Yeah, because nobody really knew what to do with the computer, you know? And that's how my Doom adventure started. And every Doom game that comes out, I get really excited and I batter through it and I enjoy it every single time.
It's on the Game Pass. So
well, you're missing out. I think now's a good time to get back into it, man. Now's a good time. It is on the Game Pass.
Game wise, definitely. I think one of the highlights for me,
what other games got you excited?
Was one of the ones that looked the most indie. It's the one that after we watched it, it sat with me and sort of resonated with me really well. Was that 12 Minutes? Not the fanfare, not the biggest game that was released there, but the whole time loop. Managed to pull off
the idea I would want
it to be pulled off with the whole you can make incremental changes every time you go back in time and you can fill out the story because it's an interactive story. It's not really going to be a full game in a traditional sense. So I think if they do it that well, that's only going to be, I would think, 4 to 6 hours. But
yeah, it gave me the impression that it was about that.
Some of the best gaming experiences I've had are games that are indie games, sure, are 4 to 6 hour games, like Journey, Brothers. Is it Two Souls or Souls, Tale of Two Brothers?
Tale of Two Brothers. Something like that. I know the one you mean.
And those sort of shorter versions, I've always had a lot of fun, especially with sort of streaming and being able to share that with people is, for the first time I've ever played it, those are some of the most
fun. That's the way to play them, right? Is to, you treat them as an experience. Exactly. You know, they're not there for hard action or anything else. You're like, I want to know a story. I want you to tell me a story.
Take me away somewhere.
That's exactly what it is. I think 12 Minutes will offer exactly that. But it gave the idea. Originally, I thought, you're only in that one room. You know, you're just in the living room with your table. But then as it goes on, it looks more like it's going to be
you survive a little bit better. It doesn't catch you in this room, so you get into the next room, and then you get into the next bit of story every iteration of it. There was some bedroom stuff.
There was, and the bathroom, right? I wonder if they're going to do it like a roguelike, where you always have to start from that first knock on the door, you know, the first with a gift
it
giving.
It could be my game of the year.
It could be a really good one.
What was your big, exciting one that got you the most pumped?
Probably Doom. I stayed up for Doom. I was interested in Wolfenstein because I love that kind of rail shooter thing, especially with the co-op angle. I'm a big fan of that. But the curveball for
exactly
me
the same
was
way.
I've played
Gears. I get a little bit motion
sick. I've never played a Gears game.
Because it's behind them. There's a lot of body sway. It feels like the camera's swaying along with it. It makes me feel a little bit ill. And I know that's something that is fairly common with people that get that motion sickness feel. So if they can maybe eliminate some of that, this could be very exciting. It looked like it had an interesting story.
For people that don't want to rely on reactions for their gaming, I think that's going to be a journey. You know, it's you've got the gauntlet challenges with the escape and all of that sort of stuff coming in, which I'm a big fan of. You know, I like stuff like that. Stuff like The Division, where you co-op against PvE, that stuff really sits well with me.
It's that very Warhammer.
And I like the kind of aesthetic, you know, the big armor, the big obscene guns with like teeth chainsaws on it and things like that.
Yeah.
Exactly that. I think that's probably the appeal, right? It feels like Warhammer 40K. Definitely appeal there. Very, very Space Marine. But the other one that caught me was this Ghostwire. You know, the one that the lady came on to announce that I wasn't really expecting at all.
This is the woman that everyone loved.
She did the kawaii thing.
Yeah.
That one.
I totally know what that was.
The game that she was bringing in looks like a kind of like a psychological horror / paranormal horror type, I think. But that one looks like it's going to be really interesting, along with Blair Witch.
Blair Witch looked like Outlast to me. We all thought it was going to be an Outlast reveal.
Yeah, same.
I really
same
loved
the initial.
That you could use the camera. It was in the sort of the corner of the screen rather than it was full. You know, and he does pull it to full screen, but it had it in the corner, so you sort of have your difficult to see blurred background, all dark. And there's also that tiny little version of there's a man now. He's gonna get.
They're gonna play it, right? You're gonna see things in the camera that you don't.
But I don't
want to
be walking around the whole time
like
looking at the camera, looking for batteries, like I was with Outlast. Outlast was okay. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a little too
Outlast,
much.
The biggest battery hunt in the world. Well, it's Blair Witch Project is made by Bloober Team, which was the team that made Layers of Fear and Observer and Layers of Fear 2.
You know it's going to have a quality to the story as well, which is even more exciting.
Yeah, the pedigree is great stories. And particularly, a lot of their games are almost on rails. you know, you're made to go a certain way. Your brain makes you go a certain way. And they always got the pacing right, which is something I'm a big fan of. I don't like going around in circles in games.
Pulls
because
you,
I can't find the door that unlocked.
It de-immerses you from the situation. That's the thing I love the most about Layers of Fear. Layers of Fear was my favorite horror game, probably of all time, the first one.
Yeah, ditto.
It was so organic, and it didn't make you feel like it was easy, as in you didn't know where to go. Didn't feel like it was holding your hand. But at no point did I feel stupid and, oh, do I have to check this door again? Or do I have to go downstairs again? Or you know how sometimes Resident Evil is? I love Resident Evil.
Yeah,
Resident
if you don't Evil's know where you're going, you're in trouble in those games.
And it had none of that. And that allows the story to flourish in a way that most horror games just don't have. So yeah, definitely Blair Witch is going to be higher.
I think it'll be a good one for the year. I really do. I was also drawn to Watch Dogs.
Watch Dogs was the weirdest one for me because I really, really disliked the first one to the point where I went and got it on the day one and I think I picked it up after I finished work. By the time I woke up in the morning, I'd taken it back to the store. I really, really disliked it. And I skipped number two completely. Number three...
I haven't played either of them.
So exciting. My only worry with it is that Ubisoft... When Watch Dogs was being hyped in the E3 stages, it was very much like, you can hack anything and you can do this with traffic lights and you can pull from this and you can do that. And then when you got it, you could do four things.
Yeah.
And they are now promising you can recruit anyone in the world. And I don't understand how that is possible because that would mean if there's conservatively 5,000 people in the world, which is obviously more than that, I would think. But in their little world, say 5,000 people, they're not recording 5,000 people's worth of origin stories.
No, and they're not. Stories. It's going to be procedurally generated, right? So there's going to be like 500 people that fit the brawler archetype, you know, and they go to there, and then your old ladies are these ones
so
and so on.
That's... You recruit a brawler and you get the brawler origin story for that character skin that looks it, and then you run to recruit another brawler, do you get the same story? That's where it starts to unravel a little bit.
Unravel, yeah.
But I may
I guess
well
you
be
get
wrong.
The same perks.
But I'm excited.
But you get
about
a different story.
I want
it to be good.
I want to recruit a guy and him to be completely useless. I want to recruit a guy and he's me and he's like, I don't know, I'm in sales. That's what I want. I want an idiot who does nothing and I want to take that idiot and run him through the whole game. That's
I get you.
That's
okay.
What I want.
Okay, okay.
The whole exciting hell, and everyone who was watching, and I'm sure it was the same with you, lost their composure a little bit when Helen arrived and you could play as a little old lady.
That was
lady.
Amazing.
And that was wonderful. But she's not a little old lady. She's a retired assassin. She's not a normal little old lady.
She might be
she's
a normal Peckham
obviously
lady.
A very specific
I'm in for that.
I mean, most normal Peckham ladies are
former MI5 assassins,
whatever it is. MI5, that's it.
All
that's
in.
What I'm looking for. Assassins. Most of them are, I assume. They're just bowling and feeding birds. So my concern is that it's going to be a little less than promised. However, even if it's 20% of what they've promised, I'm so excited to play that game.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see games. We got two games set in London this year as
gonna
well.
Going to kill
right?
the guy off with that London accent immediately.
That terrible London accent at the start.
I was turned off at the game for the first 2 or 3 minutes, and then he died, and I was like, I'm into it. It's so good. I'm looking forward to it.
As soon as you hear the chav lady on the side of the road,
it
sounded
lady.
Like every Brixton
I
chav
live
ever.
With those people. If I open my window, you'd hear those people.
You should have done the voice acting for him. You missed the trick. I am quietly happy with the idea of Watch Dogs. I'm happy that it's set in London because, as you know, I'm big on the Brit stuff. So I'm very happy
love
about
that. Mapped London, and there's a good chance they would have done that.
Yeah, there is a good chance they'll have done that. You know, I mean, they had the horse markets and stuff from Clapham, so there is a very good chance.
It was very familiar vibe as they were walking around different places. It felt like places that I'd been. So
yeah, that's what you want from it, right? You want to feel like it's right. The question is how they're going to handle the objective stuff. So is it going to be like a Just Cause / Tomb Raider thing where it's like, capture this tower for this intelligence and then do this one mission in it and so on? Or is it going to be a narrative-driven thing? Or
it looked like it was going to be narrative. What I mean? And what looked most interesting to me, even if it is pulled down from the lofty promises that they've made, even if it's scaled down to 4 or 5 different types of people, that's still 5 different ways you can approach
absolutely
infiltrating this building. You can go in and beat everyone up, or you can have the little old ladies humpy spider thing.
The face humpy spider thing, yeah.
The face humpy spider.
That can definitely
thing.
And be that's, a thing.
It, either way, I'm excited about it, and it's definitely going to be a day one purchase for me.
That's, yeah, same for me. Absolutely same for me. I'm going to pick that one up. Doom, Wolfenstein, Watch
Dogs,
Wolfenstein,
I'm
day
on
one
the fence about,
me.
Though the co-op might swing me on.
I have love for the series, so it's that again, it was an early FPS game for me, and I've played all of them. I haven't enjoyed the last installments. The last one, because they made it, there was too much stealth element, and Wolfenstein to me is not the stealth game.
Doom with Nazis, right? That's my understanding of it.
It's Doom on rails. Yeah, that's the take of it. Doom on rails. And that's how I like it. It doesn't have the aliens, it has the people, and you can dual wield the guns and all that kind of silliness, you know.
It's
just
so much
top,
fun. And which that's is what Doom want. Is. You want and a game that is not too seriously. We lost Duke Nukem, we've still got Doom on Wolfenstein. We deserve to keep these.
Rip, yeah, it's gone. Rip it. It's dead. It's
never coming back.
It's gone. And speaking of over the top, there's Borderlands 3.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of the Borderlands series. Absolutely a huge fan. I love the narrative. I love the characters. I love everything they've ever done with it, with the exception of the pre-sequel, but we don't talk about that publicly.
So we don't talk about the pre-sequel.
We just don't talk about the pre-sequel. No. The best thing about the pre-sequel was Butt Stallion, and that should tell you everything you need to know about
the
pre-sequel.
The number one game I wish that I loved.
All right.
I've tried playing that game 5, 6, 7 different times, and I've never been able to get, for me, the right combination of people that I'm playing with seems more important than the game itself. The game is important, there's no question, but the experience of playing with friends, and I always feel like, because I came to the party late with Borderlands, probably 18 months, 2 years after Borderlands 1 came out, I played it. I'm being dragged through the game, and I'm just the puppy in the background. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know where we're going, but there's a group of people, and I'm running with them.
If you're going to play Borderlands,
and they've all got the best guns, and I'm
yeah, no, you don't, you don't, you can't play it that way. That's not how you play it, because you'll miss too much going at that speed. You know, it has a lot of random silly things in it, and they're there, and they're eye-catching, and they drive you towards them. And if you're just being power leveled through it, it's just not a fun experience. But when is, you know,
so maybe I need someone to carry me through it, but not carry.
No, you
me
need somebody that's just played it before. Just get someone that's played it before that'll start a fresh level one with you and play through the narrative. That's the trick.
Don't take hints well, but okay, I'll look for that person.
I took that hint perfectly well. it's just gone to Game Pass, right? Handsome Jack Collection, or the Handsome Collection just gone to Game Pass. So, but it's not cross-play.
You're a hardcore PC player, and I'm a hardcore console player.
Well, it's fine. It's two sides to the same coin, brother. Of gaming's course. Gaming.
And I do play on the PC a fair bit, and you do play on the console a fair bit. I do. You would go to the PC, and I would go to the console.
Yeah, I might play Borderlands on the console. That could be a thing. I won't play Borderlands 3 on the console.
No, but even I think I would buy Borderlands 3 on the PC.
Yeah, it's just I find that shooters, fast shooters especially, are just a better experience on a PC. But I love anything hack and slash, and anything like Gears of War. I could do Gears of War on a console with absolutely no stress. It's probably true, unless it's going to be crossplay. Yeah,
I don't.
Which hasn't been announced.
Did they mention if it was on PC?
It's coming to PC. Yeah, and it's on Game Pass.
Oh,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Gears 4 is on PC as well. And that was one of the ones I got excited for, because it was, you know, Xbox and PC. So I was quite excited for that. So yeah, I have no problem with using the console for it, but Borderlands is a game it's fast twitch and madness, and that somehow just suits the PC.
Yeah, there's a scope to it that feels like it's right. The frame rates and all that sort of thing seem to benefit more.
Yeah, I mean, it has a gun that when you reload it, you throw the gun grows legs and runs around
gun.
Shooting.
That sounds like a gun. Sounds like the sort of gun I could get behind.
It's just, on a list of madness, it's like, I just need that in my life. I just need to see how that works.
Everyone's told me how funny it is. Everyone's told me how humorous the whole Borderlands experience is. And I've never really got into the story enough to see it. I've seen this funny moments I've seen, but it's never been as into it, as been able to be sucked into it. So maybe it is playing with the right people.
It's not being power leveled. You don't want everything dying in one shot.
No,
you know, that's not what you want at all. But they're what they're doing with Borderlands 3 that's different to the other Borderlands is, previously, if I was a level 70 and I joined your game, I could one-shot everything because it was your level,
mm-hmm.
Which is a standard dynamic of the looter shooter kind of game. What they're doing with Borderlands 3 is, if I was a level 50 and I joined your level 2 game, for you, all the enemies and all the loot will be level 2. For me, wow. they'll all be level 50.
That was my biggest complaint with the first Division game, is that when you'd have someone, so you'd be like level 10 and you'd have a friend that was level 20, they'd jump in the game and then suddenly all of the bad guys have become level 17, but you're still level 10. So they wouldn't scale down, they'd scale up.
Yeah, yeah, that was the standard approach for it, was a scaler. Yeah, yeah. Well, this doesn't work like that. You're effectively in two different instances of the same game, playing through the same story, but the mobs will scale to you. So the loot you get and the work you have to do is basically equal for both of you. Which I thought was a really cool mechanic to go forward into, you know.
That it begs the question, why has that not always been the way that it's been done? It's so obvious.
Well, I guess nobody's ever thought about it, but it you know, you're watching this video and you're like, that's amazing. Because it cuts power leveling out straight away, which is great. It cuts the need to drop guns for your friends and that sort of stuff, you know. Because it used to be that you would go and farm like a really powerful gun that had a certain modifier on it and then drop it and then your mate could use it and then they were overpowered for at least 30 levels, you know.
Yeah, I played the first Dying Light that way. A friend of mine would play it while I was doing other things with a stream, and then he'd come in when I'd play it and he'd be 30 levels above and he'd drop all of the best swords and all of the best.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just that he didn't understand that ruined my experience. I'm not,
yeah, it just takes all the fun out of
I'm
it,
not
doesn't
playing it?
It
anymore. I'm just
no, yeah, yeah. I'm just being dragged along. Mm. And it's you miss too much, you know.
Yeah, the cutscenes aren't the game. I think that's the thing that a lot of people miss. The cutscenes are, you work towards the cutscenes, but the game is the bit in between the two cutscenes.
Yeah, the
whereas
bits,
if you do
yeah.
that, you're just going from one to the other to the other.
Yep, you're just getting dragged, and it doesn't, games aren't fun that way. I don't like games that way. I don't really want to be carried. I want to feel like I'm contributing wholly to what's going on, you know.
But you've got the same attitude towards games, and the same with the original Destiny. When I was streaming Destiny all the time, is that I used to do raid carries, and then people used to get frustrated that I wouldn't cheese them. If you're going to cheese it, why are you even going to bother doing it? Yeah, we could skip this part, or we could play this part. You know, this part's fun. And they wouldn't get into that mindset. A lot of people were against that. I just wanted to get
finished.
Yeah,
they just wanted the loot at the end.
The loot isn't the game.
No, I agree.
At least I agree.
I mean, I come from a raiding background, right? I did 7 years in EverQuest 2 as probably the best warlock on the game. Definitely in the second best guild in the game, easily. And we raided six nights a week, you know, nights a week, 7 hours a night.
And I was exactly the same in Destiny. So it's not, that isn't shocking that you did that. It's just, because you come from a PC background, you obviously had that when you were as a kid. And I always had consoles when I was a kid, that I never got into MMOs. I've never had
one. You dodged a bullet, brother.
No, you say that, but there was one that was announced that's coming over that I am silly levels of excited about, with Phantasy Star Online 2.
Okay, okay.
I'm not big into MMOs, but I'm massively into the Phantasy Star. So the whole storyline, cool. That was one of the first games I ever played, was Phantasy Star on the Master System. So, and I still play that regularly.
I remember.
I played Phantasy Star 2, I played Phantasy Star 3, and it's just, it kills me that they went completely away from that RPG style into MMO. But if I'm going to get into one, you damn sure it's going to be that one.
That's a good
one
to go for,
The DLC, it's coming out free to play, Yeah, I'm going to sink some time. That's going to be a weekly ritual for me.
Yeah, that'll do you. I think MMOs are going to make a little resurgence with World of Warcraft Classic. Yep. I think it's going to bring them back just a little bit.
And will
bit,
you see that in as much as games, you know, like Destiny are trying to get that MMO feel, even The Division and those sort of things that are pulling raids, which are traditionally the MMO thing, they're trying to pull them in. So people are already, console people who wouldn't normally be into that sort of thing because they're used to a platformer, are already preconditioned to like that.
Yeah, well, if you took anything away from the game styles that were gracing E3 this year, it's co-op PvE. You know, it's challenging. Yeah, that's what came out of it. There was only Fallout that announced a BR. Nothing else did currently.
I'm so ready for the genre change.
Yeah, so am I. I'm all ready to burn off that. I'm done. Competitive shooters don't hold it for me anymore. But then again, something like The Division 2, where there's a little element of PvP that's optional, has interest for me. You know, occasionally I'm like, I want to go play some PvP, but I don't want it to be the focal point of what I'm doing. So Destiny 2, with all the changes coming there, Division 2. I'm hoping Ghost Recon Breakpoint has a very similar thing, you know, but that kind of style.
Ghost Recon, was it Wildlands? Yeah. When that first came out, felt like, to me, felt like Division outside of a city.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, so if this keeps with that sort of tradition of being Division 2 outside of a city, then that tracks.
Then hopefully that's the case. Yeah, I would like that. I would like that. Breakpoint's one that that's going to be a first day purchase for me, hands down. I'm ready for that one. John Bernthal has in no way influenced that, I might add. Played a cracking Punisher. But I'm definitely into that. And Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk is going to be my big
Cyberpunk
game.
Cyberpunk I was going to mention. Yeah, I was sort of saving that. There's one or two games that I'm saving to talk about, and that was one of the ones that I didn't know a lot about beforehand. And as I was, same as you, you're a note nerd like me, as we were watching through, we were making notes, and I put little stars by the ones that I'm most excited about. Very much that was next to Cyberpunk.
Yeah, so Cyberpunk's going to be huge. I mean, did you play Witcher? Have you played Witcher 3 or any other Witcher games?
I've got so many unpopular opinions about Witcher.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Okay. What didn't you like about it? Tell me.
I'm very much a target-driven person. I'm like it outside of games, but I'm more so in games where if you said to me, right, Pope, go do this, I'll go do this. But at the end of that, I need to know that story progression is going to go on to the next thing, and I need to be rolling constantly. I don't need to do one and then go, right, you can do this, or you can do one of 50 other things, because I don't know what to do. I'm just I'm circling idiot in a field, killing things indiscriminately because I haven't chosen a quest, so I might as well just kill the wolves. And that's what I found myself doing with The Witcher. I just end up not doing any of the story. And I know there's lots of people that got lost in all of the tiny little quests and the extra stories that were a whole game into themselves. I didn't do any of that either. I didn't do the main story. I didn't do the side stories. I just killed the wolves.
That's why I'm not a big fan of
Fallout. That's why I'm not a big fan of the Elder Scrolls games, because they are so expansive that they are too big for me. Yeah. I am preconditioned to go save the princess.
It's one of the things I've always found funny about gaming, and you'll see this come up with Modern Warfare when it gets ready to come out, is people asking for the 200-hour campaign. Right? So you get people that are like, it needs to have a 200-hour campaign. And you're like, well, games like The Witcher give you a 300 to 400-hour campaign, including DLC, and most people won't do it. They get paralysis by analysis, exactly as you said, or they just kind of drift on to different things or whatever else, you know.
There's too much to do, so the next game comes out, so you skip to the next game.
You just jump to that, yeah. I mean, Skyrim felt quite guilty of it. I mean, Skyrim has a huge community in itself, and it's a wonderful, wonderful game. But once I got past the main story, which I had to hard focus on, I was like, I'm not doing that because it's a side quest, you know. Otherwise, I would have never finished it. You know, they'd never have known the story.
Yeah, please don't take what I'm saying as that they're not bad games. The Witcher is clearly an amazing game. Skyrim is clearly amazing.
Yeah.
But it's just not for me.
Yeah, I get that.
They're not. And this was what we were watching through this stuff. Obviously, you've got reactions of the community saying, one game's amazing and the next game will come out, and I think that the Square Enix one and the Nintendo one were very heavy on this for me, because they'd announce a game that everyone was into, and then they'd announce five games that they just weren't built for us. They were just JRPGs, and the people who tend to sort of watch us don't tend to be too into that game, so they're like, oh, well, this is just another one. Like, well, yeah, there's hundreds of millions of people who are really into that. You just, not everything can be built
doesn't,
for you,
doesn't have to fit. Yeah, well, so Bethesda with all their mobile games,
and that was another complaint that they were saying, that so many mobile games, like, yeah, but there's so many mobile game players, you're not one of them.
Well, apparently, and I didn't know this, but they account for 50% of the income of the gaming market as a whole,
and they are literally, and this is what I said to them, they are paying for you to get the game that you want so that you can have your game that takes 5-10 years to build. 10 years is probably a little bit over the top, but 5 years to build a game, but they can afford to waste that time and not make as much money, because in that 5 years, they're also banging out all of these free-to-play mobile games that's paying for your staff to make.
They've managed to make them cross-play as well, haven't they? So you can play like Blades and stuff on the PC, and it crosses the save over to the mobile and so on and so forth.
A lot of stuff coming out on Switch that way, yeah. And I'm all for it. I think that you shouldn't. I know Dr. Disrespect had a tweet saying mobile gamers aren't gamers. But they are.
That's an on-brand tweet.
He's just being controversial because that's who he is. But
That's what he does, yeah.
Him saying that is one thing. He's, the community jumping on that and saying, no, you're right, is a whole different thing. They're not jumping on the brand. They're airing an opinion. And
yeah,
it doesn't matter if you're holding a controller, you're holding a mouse, or you're playing on your phone. It's a game. That's just what gaming is.
Gaming is gaming. Escape is escape.
There's no good or bad to any of that.
Yeah, I'm happy that the scope of the games was huge this year. The difference between game A, game B was huge. And I think that all in all, there's going to be something for everybody. We're all going to go broke in September. That's clear. And then we're going to go broke again in March next year.
I am looking at a March release for next year that is going to, yeah, is going to eat up my second wave of money.
There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. But I'm kind of okay with that. I mean, Wolfenstein's
there's
next
so
month.
Many games
that's
that are
going to come out next month. That's
they're just almost
July
now, yeah.
26th.
They're just within, and if you consider November,
just there.
Between now and November, which is what, 4 months, 5 months? That's no time at all. That'll fly past.
Yeah. Well, and there's a Modern Warfare release to get chucked out somewhere. There's still no date for that.
That's going
to
be...
Or is that
October? November, I would have thought. Probably...
It's usually October,
it's in
yeah.
there somewhere. Sony didn't have their big release of stuff as well, so there's probably some extra stuff that we didn't hear about necessarily that will come up as well. There's going to be new stuff on top of that. There's going to be more stuff this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very...
Well, we've had no Fable announcement.
Yeah,
no Fable. Elder Scrolls 6 announcement. These were both expected announcements, but neither of these have been announced at all. Nintendo are going to probably pull something with a Zelda game.
There was
you know.
Zelda was announced as in development. There was no Mario game. There's some games that they didn't talk about that I saw in their pre-show, but I didn't catch the dates of them. Peach's Castle, something to that effect. That's going to be coming soon.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got Luigi's Mansion coming out this year. That's coming out. They didn't give a specific date, but that's in 2019.
Well, Nintendo smashed their presentation every year, right?
I was super
it's pre-recorded,
disappointed
which
with
is
it.
Great. Really?
Of all of the presentations, that
even
was...
Even the Bowser joke?
The Bowser joke got me, and so many people were like, oh, this is cheesy, and I'm just sat there with a massive grin going, this is amazing!
Cheese,
I'm loving this! They made it Bowser! It was like, every single other conference was an hour and a half. Theirs was 45 minutes. Every other Fair. One had marquee stuff. Their two marquee things were Luigi's Mansion, which was the second thing they announced. And then they sat on, admittedly, as I said before, games that just aren't for me. Animal Crossing, they announced that. They announced that was...
Yeah, that was huge.
No, but we all knew about
me.
That, but we knew... But they announced that it was next year. Everyone was expecting that this year. So even that seemed to be a
they
letdown.
Delayed it, yeah.
And then they sort of shoehorned in, oh yeah, also we're making another Zelda game. No details, just also.
The prime this year is going to be Pokemon Sword and Shield.
It's just, it was difficult for me to get excited because I went in with it such high expectations and it really didn't deliver for me. I am excited about Luigi's Mansion. That is a game that I'm gonna play. I probably will look at the Olympic game one. I think the Zelda game that is the Link's Awakening, the one that was top down, super
cute. Yeah, I know the one you mean.
Yeah, I'm excited about that a little bit.
Yeah, well,
I'm secretly
I watched
excited.
All of that with my community manager, Alessana, and she was a massive Nintendo fan. And I just muted my mic and sat there while she squealed, mate. She was in yeah. love, you know.
There's something about being involved with someone else's joy.
There is. It's beautiful,
that will
right?
suck you into their joy.
It's if you hear someone talking about something they're passionate about and they just start gushing, you know, there's nothing more beautiful than that. It's wonderful, you know, especially around games.
Even just watching, I watched the event live with the community. I don't normally do that. I normally sort of disseminate it and have like a little chat where we watch the actual briefings all live.
Yeah.
And the ones that I couldn't stay up for because they were like 3 a.m, I watched to begin the day the next day. So anyone who hadn't seen it because the same reasons I couldn't then watched it in the morning. And there's something genuinely special about someone being excited about a game that you were never even considered to be excited about. And then suddenly you desperately want it because they've made you want it. It's a treat.
Yeah.
It's a treat. It's a gift.
I think every gamer could probably tell you at least two to five pinnacle moments of games that made, you know, that just make your fucking heart swell. You know, Metal Gear Solid, PlayStation 1, the swimming scene that was on the demo and then the main game where you swim into the submarine dock, climb onto the side and Solid Snake stands up, right? Absolute pinnacle moment for me because it was the moment that switched me over to console for a little bit.
That's a big step.
It was for me because I went from old school PC to, well, from Mega Drive, really, onto the PlayStation 1. Always had a PC in the background, you know, with some games on it and so on and so forth. That was a thing. And then we go on to, like, the Valve noise. You know, the sound, that noise that comes out of Valve with their logo, which was Half-Life. And I think, you know, those things are... The sound of Sonic collecting a ring or losing his rings.
Mate, I close my eyes and I hear the Sega. And exactly. That's just... All I have to hear is the announcement of the company. And the PlayStation coming up.
And all the memories just come flooding back, right?
The little PlayStation 1 pin drop noise.
What about being blinded in the middle of the night by that really bright screen on the PlayStation 1? Mm. You know, they had that one white screen that when you turn it on, you just completely blind for the next 3 minutes, you know? I miss that stuff. And a lot of modern games don't capture them very well. You know, they don't have that kind of brand ritual anymore, but mostly because it's not new, right? We expect something different now that we never did.
Becoming grumpy old men.
I think there's probably
much in that.
What's this crap coming in here that ain't for me?
Games. These kids don't know what they got.
Yeah, they don't know they've been born.
They don't know what it's like to not be able to save. Got to stay up a little bit longer because I can't save on this.
Or when you want to save that one block on the PlayStation 1, but you haven't got space anymore and you can't save it because you have to be out of the game to change your memory card. So you've just lost all that progress.
For me, that teaches forward planning. That's a life skill PlayStation has gifted to you.
It teaches you how to spam F5 on a keyboard so that you can auto-save every step of the way. You know. It's good. Speaking of consoles, of course, we've got the Xbox Scarlet announcement, Project Scarlet, the new Xbox coming out.
Which is that the one that said there were going to be no load screens? That's part of that one? I think that's one of the key things that they said.
As I understand it, they're going to have a high performance one, which would be the equivalent to the X, which is going to have very, very few load screens, towards none. You'd occasionally get a bit of a hitch as it changed zones, but because of the speed of the chip and the SSD,
basically,
they reckon that they're going to be able to procedurally load everything that goes through. Yeah, which is a huge statement and great. I do wonder if the console's overkill.
I want that. I want just overkill. A little bit. I want it to be so good that I don't feel like him. Like, for a good example of it is I'm running on an Xbox S at the moment. So I've had this for 6 months because I've just upgraded from the base one that I had, which was basically a day one console. And I'm playing Sea of Thieves and I'm constantly hitting load screens and I'm watching people on PC and I'm watching people on with the X. And they're loading in 50% at least quicker than me. And in a game like that, because they've loaded in, I'm dead second I load in because they've got enough time to load in, stand behind me, wait until I've loaded in, and kill me again.
I get you.
If you can take away the load screens because of the software limitations, I'm 100% for that. And then obviously you've got the frame rate and the taking away the limitations from there. That's going to make for a better experience.
I don't think they've announced. They're saying that they're going to be able to drag out frame rates of up to 120 frames, right?
If they can pull out 60, that's an extreme jump.
That's going to be the main thing. But here's the problem and the limitation that I see that may not even be a problem, right? They're saying it's full backwards compatibility from go. A lot of the older games, unless they're Xbox X enhanced, aren't going to be able to take advantage of the console at all.
In load speeds. They just won't in. And
yeah, actually, that's a fair point. Yeah, they will.
And you can't build a console saying, oh, well, they're not going to have the frame rate, so let's not do the advanced frame rate. You build a console for the games for the console, and if the backwards compatibility benefits from it, brilliant. If it doesn't, then it doesn't, because it's not built for backwards compatibility. It just, that's the side project. That's the side.
It is, but you also have to factor in Game Pass. You know, Game Pass is going to bring a lot of games to it, and you're right, the load screens will be the main factor there. So that means nobody's going to be able to read those tips that are on the load screens.
Nobody's going to know what they're doing.
No tutorial anymore.
I've never
just
even considered
guess.
That. You
know? Well, the reason I know that is because that's a problem on PC. If you play a retro game or an older game, you'll never see a load screen, which means you don't see the tips. You know, so
it's not a problem I'm having at the moment. So I get the same four tips.
I run the S as well. So I definitely get that. Loading screens are a pain.
They are.
But they reckon they're getting rid of them, right?
They are. And I know a lot of people have complained. So I'm a big fan of the loading stuff while you're in the game mechanic that a lot of games sort of enjoy. I know a lot of people complain about. Mm-hmm. But because it's like when I watch movies, I get so sucked into stuff that I don't notice until someone points it out to me. Genuinely, when I played Resident Evil 2 for the first time, my brother was like, this has got too many load screens. I was like, don't we talk about this? There's zero load screens the entire time. He's like, all the doors. It just takes so long. I was like, the doors? I didn't even know the doors were load screens. I thought the door was just the door.
Yeah, just procedural door
adding
screens,
a little bit
of
attention to me. And when you're in an elevator, you've got a couple of people talking to you and there's a little bit of exposition going on that's a load. I don't notice that that's a load screen. My brain it just doesn't connect that way.
A lot of the time with that sort of stuff, especially if you're taking it from a streamer's point of view, that stuff is actually good.
Because it allows for conversation.
Because it lets you talk to your chat, yeah. Which is the point of why we do what we do, right?
Oh, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, a big part of the reason I stream is because I like to recreate the old couch co-op idea. And that's something that would happen. I wouldn't talk to my brothers. You know, I grew up with two brothers, but I wouldn't talk to them whilst the action was happening.
No,
not at all, you know. Which is not necessarily the style I stream in, but it's still nice to have those little breaks. I do still enjoy that. A little bit of travel time doesn't bother me.
They allow you to catch up with chat. From a purely selfish streamer point of view, it does allow you to that extra few seconds to skim to see
just,
if you missed
just
anything.
Read the whole message, you know. But then again, games aren't designed for streamers. You know, we just have
they
to.
Should
we
be.
Just have to
All
make
things
them
should
work.
Be designed for me.
Well, that's a very southern viewpoint.
It's a very London attitude.
Very London attitude indeed. That's what it is. We from the north, we're a simpler folk.
You're happy with what you get. It might be last year's tech, but you know, you're happy because you've got tech.
I've got margarine on my bread, love. Look. Look at this. Oh,
impressed.
Did you ever think you'd see the day?
I think there was a couple other games that we didn't talk about that I was excited about.
Go on, tell me.
Final Fantasy VII, the remake, looks like the most beautiful game in the world. And I will put myself in a dark little corner and play that forever. it's such a beautiful story. And if they've changed it in a way that it looks like they're going to have added a bunch to it, and it was beautiful, and I'm going to play the crap out of it. It's definitely, that's something that I'm very, very excited about.
Shall I tell you my dark shame?
I've never played Final Fantasy VII.
I've never played a single Final Fantasy game.
None of them.
Not one. Nope. I've never played one.
But on the plus side, you're a northerner, so where are we now? We're 2019. There'll be one coming out soon. You'll get the first one in like 6 months.
Good, thanks. The JRPG scene has never been one for me. I came up with Sega.
Yeah, but so did I. But so, I played Phantasy Star, which is basically the same thing.
Yeah. They just never really appealed to me.
I don't know. I think you'd do so well. I think you'd enjoy it so much. I think it'd be such a good experience for you.
I don't connect with it though. I don't connect with JRPG stuff. I never have. I never got into the anime stuff.
But neither
you know,
do
all
I,
that
I
sort
don't
of
play
praise
any of them.
Passed me by. I'm more into the. I'm more akin. I would go into something like Witcher. Because I love medieval stuff as opposed to samurai stuff.
Just a little bit. Just play through the intro. You'll love it. And the Final Fantasy VIII remake or remaster, not remake, remaster is coming out, which everyone got very excited about. And I'm I'll probably play that. The Avengers as well.
What did you think of that?
I was immediately, again, I'm all about immersion. And that's what builds a game for me, is that it comes from a base of that. And having characters that look differently to the actors that I know is a huge issue for me. And having voices that are not the actors that I know is a huge issue for me. And I was thinking that I am okay with Spider-Man. Spider-Man's a different actor, but Spider-Man wears a mask for 99% of the game. So probably that, to me, it doesn't count.
I don't mind. Personally, I don't mind that they've broken away from the stereotypes and the likenesses of those actors. I'm okay with that.
There's some great actors in it, though. There's some gaming heavyweights.
Yeah, there is. And I'm excited that it's different people. I really am. I don't want the time of the Avengers movies, that bulk. I mean, now bear in mind, right? When I first got with my wife, the first date movie we watched was one of the Marvel movies. In fact, I believe it might have been Captain America or close to, right?
Yeah.
And then we've just gone out. I mean, the first date night we'd had in 18 months, and we went out to watch Endgame. You know, we drove, I had to drive 40 minutes to a different town to find a screen that had it on. You know, but that's the power that Marvel had for us. You know, it's a huge part of my life. It has been.
It's
the
one
whole
of the
time.
Defining parts of your relationship. It's a milestone for you.
It absolutely is. It's been a huge thing. And I'm happy to lay it all to bed and start the new Marvel universe. And that includes the game. I don't want the game to be a tribute to the movies. The movies are incredible. They should be left alone.
I wouldn't think twice about watching an animation with different voices. Cross my mind that
I understand in my head that that's Captain America. I can see that that's Hulk. I can see that that's Falcon. I can see that that's Hawkeye. Why have they got Hawkeye in it? You know what I mean?
Always such a good question.
But that, you see my point. You know, it doesn't matter to me. I just want to kind of hit someone in the face with a shield or with Thor's hammer, you know? I'm okay with that. I think that's okay. But there has been some outrage, hasn't there? People haven't been too happy.
People have been disgusted with the actor changes. I've seen people complaining about... I saw one of the bigger Fortnite streamers. I don't want to name who it was, but one of the bigger Fortnite streamers that pops up on my timeline quite a lot was complaining that the graphics are bad and the gameplay is bad. I was thinking, they didn't really show too much gameplay.
No, I didn't see much gameplay.
You're angry because you're angry. You're now telling everyone that everything is bad because the one thing you didn't like was bad. And it is bad.
Yeah.
If you really hate the fact that they're not the actors, then it's bad. But that doesn't make the gameplay bad. And I didn't think the graphics were horrible.
I think that for the scope of the project, the graphics seemed fine.
You have to sacrifice one thing to gain the other.
We're not immediately releasing, are we? So there's time.
Hmm.
You know, a quality pass can still go over it. An update and a few graphics and sharpening and enhancing can still be a thing.
Got the better part of a year.
Yeah, exactly. They just need to make it so that the content and the story progression, because apparently they've got 2 years of story already. That's what they're saying. They've got 2 years of narrative story already.
They've got 50 years of narrative stories. If they really want to pull from anywhere, they've got easily 50
You say
years.
That, right? But I can... Now, this is what I was thinking of. If you want to see a massively lore-rich universe, you look at Warhammer 40k.
Right.
Name me a Warhammer 40k game that's came out that's been worth a damn. There really hasn't been one, apart from maybe Dawn of War.
Yeah, but is that...
And maybe
that
only Dawn of War 1.
It hasn't got the budget that a large-scale Avengers game would have now. Because Marvel have taken movies. They own movies. They could make a movie about a character you've never heard of. They could make up a character today, make a movie about it tomorrow, and it'll make $1 billion. Because they are a power now. So they...
Yeah, and they've got Scrooge McDuck.
So they can, if they can do that into gaming, and they look like they're putting effort into... You've got Ultimate Alliance 3, you've got the Lego Marvel games. So many... They spread it so thin on how many things that they're doing. They're obviously putting money into it. So I agree that you're going to be fine.
And I hope that works, though. I hope that they are going to pull on everything they've got. Because they've got the artists, they've got the animators, they've got the story, they've got years of backstory, you've got character bios for days.
No, the roster is ridiculous. They've said that they're going to be constantly adding... they're going to be adding characters, they're going to be adding DLC at no additional cost. That in itself concerns me a little bit, because why would you continue to make stuff if you're not making money out of it? But then
they're not going to. No, I think that one or two of the firms this year did some clever wording, and I think we're going to see something else, whatever, something we've not really seen before.
Grand Theft Auto 5 has free updates all the time. You don't have to pay for anything. But there's a lot that you pay for. They're making a lot of money out of GTA 5, even though they're not charging. So there's going to be some sort of currency that you can buy. So they release Spider-Man. They release Spider-Man next week, and you've got a new Spider-Man character for free. But if you want 50 of these different uniforms, different costumes, then you're going to have to pay an extra $20. So there's scope for there being... You do get what they say. But if you want him to wear... The Miles Morales one.
I would be completely happy with cosmetic microtransactions going forward. I really would. If that became the new model for games, I would be more than happy.
As long as it is, you pay for the skin, you don't pay for a loot box that gives you a potential skin.
Yes, absolutely. Because bollocks to that role. I'm not interested in that. I want to purchase a skin straight away, and I don't want to buy it in parts. I don't want to buy a helmet and the armor or any of that crap. I just want to buy the suit.
The model of buying the pickaxe and the outfit and the glider. I don't want that.
I don't want that anymore. I want to be able to buy the full thing.
There's so much about E3. And the more I think about it, the more excited I get. And I always walk into E3 with zero excitement and zero expectations of what's of games to be released. And I know that's the whole point of E3. There's the whole point is that I walk away hyped.
I'm the same. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't do the research. You know these people that go in, I'm sure you had them in your community, they're like, oh, I'm excited to see this.
And you're
like,
media blackout.
I literally don't have a clue what's going to happen.
I check Twitter at 10% of how I normally would check it. I lock down from it because I want to watch Watch Dogs and go, I don't want to play this game, looks rubbish. And then 30 seconds later, I'd be like, oh my God, I need to be buying Watch Dogs. Why isn't it out now?
I need this.
You can't buy that. If I'd have got that leaked and had that sat on my own, looking at it on a low-res video on my phone in the toilet, I'm not gonna get excited.
Well, do you know what, there was a curveball which I'd like to mention as the kind of final shout, because it was the final shout of the Xbox One.
I know what you're going with.
Gods and monsters.
That's not what I thought you were
did you what did you think I was going with?
I thought you were gonna talk about Elden Ring.
No, because Elden Ring, I knew it was coming, and I think that's just going to be another Souls game. That's what I think with that. I think it's just the next Souls game. And I think it's going to be as hard as Dark Souls, which is a very frustrating series, but a very enjoyable series. I love the Gothic art style. But I don't think there's anything spectacular coming from that yet. I really don't. I think that's going to be one of those ones that comes out and you play it and then you move on. Like Sekiro. Sekiro is the same idea. It comes out, you play it, you move on. And that's what I feel is going to be Elden Ring.
I know nothing about Gods and Monsters off the top of my head. There's so much that's been pushed into my brain, I don't remember anything about it. Tell me what's about it and tell me why you're excited.
Okay, so it looks like Switch style Zelda graphics, right? That kind of painted artwork idea behind it.
I know what one you're talking about. This is the one that was on the mythology.
Yeah, the one that's based on the mythology.
You were who I was thinking of when it came out. Yeah, no, I'm excited for this too.
Well, that came out of nowhere for me, and it put a 12-inch smile on my face, mate. I was so happy. The idea of something where I can just get an RPG with a ton of mythology in it, oh my God.
But we're both mythology nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was instantly excited about it, but I knew, because we've had the conversations in the past about it before with yourself, that you were going to be. And it was kind of, you weren't even there, and I was excited because my friend was excited somewhere else in the world.
I was so happy. I was so, so happy with just seeing that somebody's taken it and they've gone, this is cool.
And it looks super cute as well. It looked really good.
It does. It looks like a kind of game I can sit with my daughter and say, you know, let's play a game that's going to tell us a story. You know, get through the mythology style of it. Because she has tons of books on it. I read her bedtime stories on it. You know what I mean?
I'm big with that with my nephews of getting something books like about that. Mythology. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's important. You've got to know this stuff.
Well, it's exciting. And it's there's a reason why these are enduring stories.
Exactly. Exactly. And they endure across culture, which is something that is, you know, games do the same thing. That's part of their appeal. You know, the narrative of a game will stick. You know, Americans enjoy it the same as Europeans enjoy it. The Japan link's a bit different, but mostly everybody enjoys the story the same, right? So, like, Cyberpunk's going to come out and everyone's going to play it and they're going to love it, yeah? It's CD Projekt Red. They're going to love it.
Yeah, you have some niche art styles that are specific to, like, Japan and stuff that don't always translate, but on the whole, especially mainstream games.
Yeah, they do. And I think games like Gods and Monsters have an absolute place. It's like, give me something cute. Tell me a beautiful story about it. Let me explore all the mythology stuff that I love, you know, and let me play around with it, because mythology is not set in stone. It's interpreted. You know, so you can have a different idea. And if they're going to let me play around with stuff like that, or this is our take on this story, I'm all in for that.
If that becomes a Witcher-style game, I will still love it. Finding those different stories and finding the ones that I know, learning the ones that I don't know, that's still going to drive me into it.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting.
One of the big hooks of Witcher for me in the original point was these mythological creatures that I knew a bit about. You know, I've come across them in previous stories and, you know, you need this and that to beat this particular combination and so on.
And it's always been games that have touched on that, with, like, if there's a Medusa in the game, you'd need to find the Exactly. Mirror. There's always been elements, but I like that this is a specific.
It's gone all in on it.
That's what this is.
It's gone all in on it. Because the only game that's come close was Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And that had some of the mythological creatures in there. So the Minotaurs in there, Medusas in there, etc., etc. You know, some of them exist. But you're right. Nothing's ever gone all in. And I really want there to be something like that.
Well, if you think of the amount of stories that we were talking about with the Avengers and the pulling from superhero lore, how many different things that there could be to do. This is equal amount. This could be on the same scope. This is a multi-story game. This could work that way.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, this is primary stuff. For me, this is primary interest stuff. I love mythology. I love medieval, you know, knight warfare, that kind of stuff. That's my go. I'm more a fantasy guy and a mythology guy than I am a sci-fi guy.
Agreed.
You know, and these kind of stories, Elden Ring is going to be the same. It's going to tie into all of this for me. And I'm glad that we're seeing some of that, and that it's not a genre that's running out in any way, you know.
I think we're very lucky, the two of us specifically, because we've gone through, especially as streamers, the last, feels like longer, but probably maybe two and a half years of very heavy Battle Royale games with the occasional COD game chucked in. And I very much have enjoyed Battle Royales, and I've very much enjoyed the COD multiplayer shooter games. But the games that I would choose to play are those co-op games.
Yeah, the ones that are coming up.
And
right?
The stories that I like are the Avengers, are the mythology stuff. And it seems to be that the world may be edging more towards what we want.
I feel that the devs of these games are looking at it and realizing that we want stories. I think that's what it is. It's like, I need you to tell me a story. I need to... The point of a video game for me, with you know what my background is... It's escapism. I can attach to a character and I can go on a journey and I can come out the other side and feel like I did that.
You've achieved it.
You know? Yeah. Whereas Battle Royales are fine for a quick adrenaline rush, but you never feel committed. I never feel committed to those.
After a certain amount of time, and I feel, you know, very much that way when I play it, because I still dive into Fortnite and I still dive into PUBG and games like Apex. There doesn't feel like there's any consequence anymore. So if I die, I'm not even angry, because, you know, I've just started a new one and I'll get further next time. That's the charm, and that's the why they're good, is because you can restart over and over again. But it's just, if there's no loss, there's no win. Doesn't matter that you came first, because as soon as you come first, you're starting over again.
Yeah, there's no consequence. You just go into a loop, which is one of the things that always amuses me when people go like, well, Destiny 2 is really grindy. Like,
it's too repetitive. You just seem to be doing the same thing over and over again. That's what I say with
you're like, you mean like a BR?
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing, but I'm doing it over a 2-hour period. You did that for 18 minutes.
Yeah, and then did it again. You know, it's yeah, no, that's...
And there are variations with it. I know it's a little facetious to say it is completely... rinse and repeat every time, but there's only a stock amount of ways that it can do. You went in, you got away, you won, or you lost. Yeah. There's only variants of that within a fight, so.
But horses for courses, right? There's something out there for everybody. And gaming is gaming. I don't care whether you're playing on a board or you're playing on a computer or you're playing on a phone. It's still gaming. You're still looking for that little bit of excitement, a little story, a little bit of escapism, you know, and I think that's a universal thing. And I think the games that are coming for us now, exactly as you said, are going to be absolutely brilliant for that. You know, we're going to get some real adventures. We're going to get some real adrenaline kicks. I mean, mate, I'm going to start Doom and I'm going to have a smile on my face for the entirety of that game, you know? I think all in all, I know people were disappointed with E3, but I've taken a lot from it. I've taken a lot from
it. People are always disappointed with E3. I think we always have the set of people that are... super high expectation, and you cannot live up to the hype. It's the Star Wars effect.
Yeah, that's fair. You can't ever please
it. No, because you've set an impossibly high standard. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I mean, on a personal level, I've taken a lot from it.
For me, it was a very good evening.
Yeah, it's going to be a good year ahead. From a streaming perspective and from a personal perspective, you know, as an old school gamer.
Expensive year ahead.
Yeah, that's the thing too.